HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bose. This is HR Happy Hour 170. I just did HR Happy Hour Show 169 like yesterday. It's amazing how fast and furious these shows are coming on. But this is HR Happy Hour 170. We're calling it Driving Performance with Technology. This show is being recorded on Thursday, August 15th. We'll probably post live on the website next week, probably August 22nd or so. So really great to be here. I want to say a shout-out, and we miss Trish McFarlane, the co-host of the show, couldn't be with us tonight. So, Trish, we're thinking of you. Have fun tonight at football or gymnastics practice or whatever it is you're doing tonight. So we'll be thinking of you throughout the show. Since we just did a show like 2 days ago, I'm a little short on general announcements and sort of promotional material. So I will continue to promote the only thing that really matters, the HR Technology Conference coming up in October, which you must come, please, hrtechconference.com, as well as HR Evolution, our one-day event prior to HR Technology. And you can find out more about the HR Evolution at thehrevolution.org. And one last thing about HR Tech, we just announced yesterday, IBM's Watson going to be live on stage at HR Tech talking HR. Watson, fresh off, well, not fresh off, but somewhat, some length of time off his win at Jeopardy, will now be taking on the world of HR, which may be more complex than Jeopardy. We'll see about that. So check it out, hrtechconference.com. So I am really excited about the show tonight. I love HR technology, of course. I love talking about HR. We just did a show about performance management a couple of days ago with Eric Mosley of Global Force. So we're still going to talk a little bit about performance, but we're going to talk about the role of technology in talent management and performance management. I love talking about it with people who are actually doing it, and that's what we're going to do tonight. We have two great guests tonight. Our first guest on the show is Mr. Tom Porter. Tom is the Director of Human Resources and Administration at Kawasaki Motors Corporation USA. Tom is headquartered in Irvine, California. Tom oversees all HR functions, including organizational development, talent management and training, staffing, and employee relations. Tom has years of corporate and small business experience in HR and workforce and business development industries. He was also the president of the Tom Porter Group, which provided consulting and sales training, as well as innovative solutions that assisted companies with the implementation of best practices in selection, hiring, and retention. Our other guest today is Mr. David Ludlow, Global Vice President of Product Marketing, for focusing on the global human capital management solutions for SAP and SuccessFactors. David's team works closely with customers, partners, analysts, and the entire SAP and SuccessFactors ecosystem to ensure that SAP and SuccessFactors is identifying and delivering the best HCM solutions for its customers. And the team also works with development and field sales, everything marketing does. You guys know what marketing people do. David has been with SAP for over 15 years and has more than 20 years' experience in the HR and HCM solution space. Been all over the place, been everywhere. You know David. He's around. So Tom and David, please welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show tonight.
Thank you so much.
Great, Steve. Great to be here.
Great, good. I told you I was going to abbreviate the bios a little bit. Those bios go on for a while, both of them. So I'll make sure they get posted on the website, though, next week. So you can really get the full effect of these guys, these gentlemen, and their great, their fantastic careers. And so really, really pleased to be here. So, Tom, I'd like to start with you as the HR pro here in this conversation, the real working HR professional. First of all, can you tell us just a little bit more about what you do and a little bit more about Kawasaki Motors USA?
Sure, Steve. Well, one of the things, I came in HR a little bit differently than most people. I started my career in sales. In fact, I spent 30 years in sales for consumer products companies before I came into the HR role, and I think that gave me a real insight into people because I was dealing with people all the time. But my role here at Kawasaki Motors USA is we represent the Kawasaki motorcycles, ATVs, side-by-side utility vehicles and recreational vehicles and the jet ski watercraft line. And we really do live our motto, let the good times roll, because it's all about having a good time and fun. And sometimes talent management isn't so fun. And I think the challenges we all have is, how do we keep everybody engaged? How do we keep having, you know, good years, year after year, and keep getting better and better? And I think those are the challenges we all face in HR.
Yeah, and Tom, there's one thing I definitely wanted to make sure I just threw out there. You mentioned, you know, the different vehicles and products and that Kawasaki makes. It's got to be pretty cool, or maybe it's not. You can tell me otherwise. I would think it's going to be pretty cool to have your product, your brand, your product sort of define the entire category. Because when people say jet ski, for example, that's it. It doesn't matter where it came from. It's a jet ski, right? There's no other term for it. It's like Kleenex, or, you know, that universal term, right? There's no other one. You have to have a jet ski if you want one of those types of machines.
Obviously. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and you couldn't say more. You know, it's like, I want a street motorcycle. I want a Ninja. You know, everybody
exactly.
knows what a Ninja is.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's
yeah.
brand names that are synonymous, like you said, Kleenex. And, you know, we try really hard at Kawasaki to live up to our image.
Yeah, no, that's. I love the let the good times roll as well. Like, yeah, that's just it's fitting, right? Because HR and talent's not always good times for sure. But, so Tom, thanks so much for being on the show. I just want a quick shout out to David, and maybe David could tell us a little bit more about, you know, beyond what we read in the bio, just a little bit more, especially about, you know, with SAP and SuccessFactors. You know, it's a big organization, maybe a little complex. Maybe you could sort of break it down a little bit for us and help us understand a little bit more about what's happening at SAP and SuccessFactors in the HCM space right now.
Yeah, sure, Steve. So the acquisition of SuccessFactors by SAP, we're now just about 18 months into it. So part of my role at SAP actually was to lead some of the post-merger integration processes, as you know, right after the acquisition. So I work very closely with the SuccessFactors counterparts to identify the parts of the portfolio that we wanted to take, you know, forward, given that SAP had all the HR on-premise solutions, but SuccessFactors
right.
had the cloud solutions. So we determined which ones we wanted to take forward, which ones we kind of, you know, wanted to de-emphasize. And then, you know, how are we going to take this combined company forward? You know, so from that perspective, I think the last 18 months have been pretty interesting. You know, working very,
right?
yeah, exactly, to say the least. you know, but it's been a great experience, I have to say. Also, just the number of customers that we've been able to talk to, you know, as we, you know, work with them to, you know, help them develop their strategies about, you know, what kinds of capabilities and what kind of systems are going to be using to deliver the HR processes and services. You know, is that on-premise? Is it cloud? Is it a combination of the two? What those roadmaps look like, you know, moving to the cloud, what the opportunities are. And so it's been a really interesting 18 months for me and my team, I would say, in the number of conversations we've had with customers and really helping them get more of a strategic I would say view over what their future, you know, HR system landscapes look like.
Sure. Yeah. David, thanks for that. You know, and it's certainly an interesting and exciting time across really the whole landscape of HR technology, and nowhere do we see evidence of that, you know, as much as what's happening with SAP and SuccessFactors as well. So thanks for that, you know, just a little bit of background, a little bit of insight on what's been happening there. You know, we can talk about that for a while, but we're really here to talk a little bit more about what's been happening at Kawasaki, certainly, and then a bit more generally about, you know, the role of talent management technology to help enable organizational success. Now, Tom, over at Kawasaki, you know, I read some of the background materials, a little bit of the case study information from the Kawasaki Motors experience, but I'd love for you to maybe, you know, maybe distill a little bit, tell us a little bit more about, in your words, you know, what was happening in talent management more generally at Kawasaki prior to you and the organization making the decision to bring in a technology partner like SuccessFactors, and maybe tell us a little bit about what was happening there prior to all of this starting.
Sure, Steve. I think, like a lot of companies, we continue to grow. And Kawasaki first came together with a bunch of enthusiasts that just had a passion for motorcycles and watercraft and, you know, coming together. And as we've grown stronger and larger, we really didn't have good processes in place. we had some departments that were doing performance reviews, but were they really performance reviews? They really were kind of a loosey-goosey type thing, and each department had their own rendition of it. And from an HR standpoint, it, truthfully, it was a nightmare. You know, we,
right.
we had different dates, you know. Well, I'm not going to do one this year. I'll do it on an 18-month rotation, or maybe another one says, well, you know, I have to do this, you know, I'm going to do one in 6 months, and you know, and I'll see about another 6 months, and I'll do it again. And everything was coming in different formats and different templates and, you know, different date ranges, and we would have to, in HR, at the time when I came in, I was in charge of OD and training, it all came to my desk, and I'm going, I'm trying to file these things, I'm going to track, you know, I had Excel spreadsheets and tabs and everything else, like, I think a lot of companies that go through these growing pains and saying, like, there's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
There's got to be a better way.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I think a lot of companies get in the same type of pattern that say they just become acceptance of dysfunction.
Right.
You know, and that we do, because we, you know, you get your blinders on, you get too close to it. And so I came in from the outside and I said, okay, I'm stepping back. And the company had already done a big research about it, and we had selected success factors early on. These guys got it together, and so that's kind of the, you know, where it all came to be for us.
Yeah, and Tom, was it primarily, at least initially, a project, or, you know, really focused on, let's improve, say, the performance management process itself, let's attack that? Was that sort of the entry point or the starting point of what you did at Kawasaki?
I think that, yes, and I'm going to say qualifying yes, is because we really needed to grow as an organization, and we really didn't have a baseline. We didn't really know who the good players are. It was all word of mouth, but there was no quantitative data to say, okay, this person's on the path to, you know, a senior leadership role, or this person's having a performance issue. This person, it's a training issue. It was just the feel. I think this is happening. And, you know,
right.
you know, you don't go up to your CFO and say, well, I think I need $100,000.
Yeah, right.
You know, they don't get that. But in HR, it's acceptable. I think, you know, no, I don't think so. Not anymore. So
yeah.
I think that was the real, you know, crux of saying, hey, analytics are great. They point us in the right direction, but now we got to do something with it.
Yeah,
so
that's a really good point.
I think that was the real thing of, like, you know, you keep saying HR, get to the table. Well, you can't get to the table if you don't know what table you're at.
Right. You know, and Tom, I think you're right that in some organizations, maybe many organizations, there's still that whether it's inability to move forward, reluctance, it's other priorities take precedence, and so on and so forth, that keeps organizations to move. You know, sometimes we think that, oh, well, the whole world's now doing this. You know, everyone's implemented technology to support things like performance management and goal planning and comp planning. But the truth is that's not true at all, right? There's probably lots of organizations still can't really move forward or get off the ball, much like you guys were for a while, right, before you started down this road. David, I'll throw it to you. Is the story, you know, you've talked to a lot of customers, certainly, is sort of the experience at Kawasaki, you know, is it brought, you still finding that out there more than not, or at least more than we think? Organizations still not really taking those first steps into technology for talent management?
No, I would say more and more are. I mean, you know, and certainly maybe I'm a bit biased because the ones I'm talking to already have or are considering doing it. But I did want to touch on one thing that Tom said because I think it's so important, and that is, you know, when we use software to automate processes, and I think, you know, automation by itself, an automation of a process, you know, in itself is a good thing. You get some efficiencies, you get error reductions, you know, and that kind of thing. But it's the data that you get as a result of that process automation that really can start driving value, you know, throughout the organization. So, you know, to Tom's point also, okay, HR has that seat at the table. You know, now what? And so if we can really take that data and really start, you know, turning it into better insights. So who are the top performers? Who do we want to target? who are the people we want to ensure that we're retaining? Are the top performers getting a larger share of the compensation, adjustments and bonuses and that kind of thing? There's tremendous things you can do with all that data, turned into analytics. And I think this is more and more that we're seeing is once the implementations are done and people are getting used to it, the next step is to really start leveraging that data to make those decisions.
Yeah, no, that's a superb point, right? Because in the evolution of these systems and the implementation of these systems and organizations, right, that first step, which is often hard, right? It's often hard to even take that first step, that automation step or that standardization step and that normalization, whatever term you want to use, right, to get, in Tom's experience, we've got everybody now on the same process using consistent forms, consistent terminology, consistent timing. But now what else can we do with this information to actually – provide meaningful and valuable input into the organizational strategy and business decisions. Tom, I'd love for you to comment a little bit about that, if you don't mind. What sort of is it better decision making? Is it faster? Is it what are some of the just the key 2-3 benefits that you, at least in your organization, have found as a result of moving down this path of standardization, automation, and bringing in a technology partner like SuccessFactors?
Well, I think first it changed our culture, which was huge. And in fact, it was one of the reasons I was such a big advocate of doing this is like we need to shift our culture to be something that it wasn't. And technology would help us. The success factor modules that were put together really were laid out in a very logical, sequential way that said, this is what great looks like. Now, we can tweak it. We can do whatever we want with it to make it fit our culture, but we have to also define our culture of what we want it to become. And in so doing with the software application, it created a common language. We never had that common language around talent management before. And so we did some co-branding. We had also launched Kawasaki University. And when we launched SuccessFactors, we tapped into SuccessFactors University, and we co-branded the university concept. And so it even strengthened learning and education and personal development within the organization. That was one of the benefits of having SuccessFactors, but it was an indirect benefit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And how we positioned it was this is not just a piece of software. This is something that's going to make us huge, substantial business of making us a world-class organization.
Yeah, Tom, those are really interesting comments. So then the one thing that I seized upon as you were talking, and I wrote it down here in my notes, is about a cultural change. Because this is something I've thought about a lot. I've been thinking about and been in the HR technology space for a while, writing about it and so on and so forth for a long time. And the ability of a technology to impact culture is a specific topic I've always been really fascinated by. And essentially wondering in many instances whether or not that was truly possible. Could technology really influence the culture or the way things get done? At a more fundamental level, not just okay, now the form we used to do in a Microsoft Word document, now it's over here, right, in a different place and it's online. But more deeply, so you're saying really at Kawasaki, that's been your experience that it's not just automation, but it's gone beyond that.
It's gone beyond that by far. I mean, you have specific goals that are stated. It starts with the president. They come down to the senior leadership who interpret them. We all know the direction of the company, and we all know what's expected. Just knowing the expectations is huge, especially if you've gone from paper and pencil to something now that's become totally transparent across the entire organization. It's a huge cultural shift.
It sounds like exactly like the kinds of things I've always been thinking about as well. I think it's very powerful and a really, really excellent example, right, of how technology can influence and impact a culture. Guys, I want to do just a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bose. With me today is our Tom Porter, the Director of Human Resources and Administration. from Kawasaki Motors Corporation USA, as well as David Ludlow, Global Vice President of Product Marketing for HCM Solutions for SAP and SuccessFactors. We're talking about technology for talent management, for performance management. Tom from Kawasaki has got a great sort of story and case study certainly that we're talking about, but we also want to talk a little bit more generally as well. And what I would love to talk about with Tom and David to some extent is maybe some more abstract or lessons that could be applied to other folks who are considering or in the middle of technology implementations or perhaps have gone through a technology implementation in the past which maybe didn't work out as well as they had hoped or didn't really provide the kinds of benefits that, at least some of which we've heard, that have definitely accrued to Kawasaki. So I guess, Tom, I'll throw it to you first, and maybe you could, if you don't mind, share a little bit about the project itself some, maybe, you know, some of the structure, the organization, maybe a little bit of the timeline, if you care. Just and really more importantly, what are two or three lessons learned, perhaps, that you'd love to share that were really, at least in your mind, really key to the success of really executing the project and getting Kawasaki to where you are today with the technology?
Well, I was part of the original implementation, and when I first saw it, you know, they were, before I came in, they were kind of beta testing. They had a little user group over here, and they were afraid of the technology because it was so new from paper and pencil. And I said, guys, you got to embrace this. I mean, people aren't afraid of the computer anymore. You don't get those people saying, hey, I can't find the any key on my keyboard. You know, those days are past. And just like any kind of new software that you get, it takes you a while to learn it. But you have to teach it. You have to embrace it. You have to package it in such a way that this is the future. And I don't think anybody wants to live in the past. And you've got to embrace it. It's got to be, and you got to make it fun. The same thing is, don't try to over-customize it day one.
Right.
You know, take the direction of your vendor and saying, hey, look, this year we're going to learn a lot. We're going to get it out there. And then every year we've made small tweaks. It becomes more of our feel, our culture, and everything else. And we continue to improve. We continue to ask our team members about, you know, what's working, what's not working, what would you like to see differently? And it's getting stronger and stronger, and everybody's buying into this. They go, oh, if we could only do this. Well, guess what? We can do that. One of the things that's become a huge success for us is SuccessFactors has a module called Calibration. And calibration gives us the ability to sit down with the senior leadership and look at our competencies that we have across the entire organization and look at the ratings before they actually are communicated to the team member. And what we're finding is some people are rating high, some people are rating low,
right.
But through calibration, we have an agreement.
Right.
And that's huge for us.
Yeah, and I'm familiar with the process a little bit as well, and I'm reminded how when we talk about things like performance calibration, what we're trying to do really, I believe, right, is trying to do it more effectively is try to eliminate some of that rater bias, right? If you
Absolutely.
Have a manager out there who just everybody on their team's a superstar versus another manager who might be just a tougher rater, right, and trying to balance that out fair. Because one of the things, right, Tom, I guess I think you'd agree is no matter what the system is or the technology or the process is, people are not going to embrace it if they don't feel like it's fair, right? And I think that's real, real important.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that's, if you try to sweep it under the rug, they're going to know that this whole system is bogus anyway. You've got to embrace it and say, you know, yes, there's good things. Yes, we could do better. And every year we get better.
Mm-hmm, sure.
You know, it's not perfect. I mean, the system works great, but it's only as good as the input you put into it.
Yeah. David, I want to throw a question over to you based on something Tom said. Tom talked at the top or briefly in his remarks about sort of, starting and accepting, maybe getting the ball rolling, not trying to be too perfect. And I love the expression, don't let perfect, be the enemy of done, right? And I And I've been in a number of pretty large organizations in my life where, you know, we definitely did. Like, if a new tool or a new system didn't meet 100% of our stated requirements, then we were not going to be able to implement it, or we were going to have to spend a lot of money to make that system, right, do what we absolutely swore we needed to do. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about just, and maybe this is a little bit about the nature of HR technology delivered, you know, in a service, software as a service model, is the, you know, flexibility, customization versus personalization versus configuration, and just kind of the experience your customers are having with kind of making the software fit what they do versus making what, you know, they do fit the software. I'd love for you to comment about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. And you know, maybe I also can provide a little bit of a unique perspective here because I've, you know, lived on both the on-premise side of the house as well as the software as a service side of the house.
Right.
And you know, in some of the on-premise implementations I've seen some very complex implementation, especially of performance management. And I think you'd actually be amazed at some of the complex implementations I've seen. I mean, just, you know, very
I would believe it. Yeah, I think I would.
You know, complicated workflows and approvals and back and forth and, yeah, you know, open it up to, you know, way too many 360 appraisers and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think by and large those failed. And I think one of the reasons they failed is they were implemented for HR and HR policies. They weren't really implemented for, you know, to really facilitate that discussion between a manager and employee. And I would say, you know, that overall communication from the CEO down as to really what the overall goals of the organization were and you know, again, how to facilitate that discussion and agreement between a manager and employee. And so I think that during an implementation, if you really try to strip away, you know, all these extraneous things, and really get down to what is the key problem that any software is trying to implement, I think the chance of success increases, and it increases quite a bit. Many organizations I hear, you know, complain about usability of, you know, oh, it's not usable, you know, this is not usable, but usability is a function of both the software itself as well as the process. And if you take a process that nobody understands and nobody gets and just puts it in a nice, pretty-looking piece of software, they're still going to get a process that nobody likes or can figure out how to do, but the user interface sure looks good, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, I would challenge, you know, anybody implementing processes to take the opportunity and say, what is it the problem we're trying to solve? I think Tom made an excellent point about culture. You know, it's really driving, you know, from the Kawasaki perspective, it's driving a cultural change in how they communicate goals and how employees are aligned. If I can paraphrase Tom, and I hope I'm doing it correctly.
You're right on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, really how they implement that change. And it sounds like, you know, they were able to leverage the best practices from SuccessFactors, you know, in doing this as opposed to, trying to implement an overly complicated system. So.
Yeah, Dave, those are some really good points. I can recall just from a prior job, and I won't mention where it was or what, but the software we were using was very, very powerful, right? And it was so powerful that it enabled our bad decisions. It enabled our poor processes. And, like, I can recall creating a workflow years ago that for a job rec, it had a recruiting system that we were dealing with, and just to open up a job rec, not to extend an offer, not to approve an offer, not even that, just a job rec to post, right? We're going to start soliciting candidates. They wanted, for a certain type of job, they wanted 14 different people to have to approve that.
Yeah.
Before, you know, in all different parts of the organization based on, you know, different elements of the job, where it was and how much it was going to be paid and so on and so forth. And the system was so powerful, it let us do it. It really wasn't even that hard to get the system to meet that requirement, but it didn't make it right, it didn't make any sense, and it didn't make anyone sort of enjoy working with that process, right, because it was so convoluted and so horrible. But,
exactly. Yeah. I mean, who really benefited from that complex process? And
It was one of those very weird things. I'm digressing a little bit, but it's one of those weird things where, I don't know, it reminds me of the old days where, like, you know, memos would go out and you would look at the CC list, right? I guess it happens today with emails or something, right? Like, who else got notified about this or who else knew that information. With this particular process, it was, well, if that person gets to approve the job rec, then I must have to approve it too, right? It was one of those things. I think it was a bit
turf
protection mechanism, but it didn't help anybody, right? And just because our system allowed us to do it didn't make it right, didn't mean it made sense, and it didn't really benefit the organization at all.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. I mean, just because the system can do it doesn't mean you need to implement it that way.
I've been around systems and implementations in different forms for a long time, you know, as well, and some of the things Tom said really resonated with me too, you know, just that let's let go a little bit of what, you know, this – everyone thinks they're unique, but the problem is some of the things we hold to as being unique differentiators really aren't. They really aren't. They're not really fundamental to the execution of our business strategy or the alignment of our people or the satisfaction of our people. They're just something someone's clinging to because. And the ability to let as many of those things go as possible, I think, bodes well for most technology implementations.
Yeah.
Guys, one other thing I wanted to make sure we hit on before we wrap this conversation up is some ideas around partnership, and particularly the customer or client and solution provider partnership. Tom, I'd love for you to talk about that a little bit. So, you know, and again, more in terms of sort of advice to folks out there who might be going down the road of systems implementation or in systems implementations today, or even just in they have partners today, but they're maybe not having a great relationship. Is there a couple things you could point out that have worked for you or you insist upon or you recommend in terms of that partnership between yourself or a client and a solution provider?
I'm big on transparency. I tend to be a very trusting person.
Mm-hmm.
And I go into relationships with vendors. Once I've selected the vendor for whatever reason, you know, the provider is saying, look, this is what I'm trying to achieve. This is what, now, give me your best thoughts and let's have a partnership. You know, there's some things that, you know, I like, some things I don't like. Ultimately, I'm open and I continue to have an open mind with working with all of my partners. And I know with SuccessFactors, you know, we've had those type of discussions. We've had some heated discussions. But it's all led,
right.
But they've been good discussions.
Right.
They've been meaty discussions. I mean, once you get it to the senior level, there are some really tough decisions that have to be made. And those are the types of things I look for in a partnership. I don't want somebody to just roll over. I want
right.
the best minds I can get around me because I'm not, you know, I don't have all the answers. And I would encourage everybody, if you selected a partner, then treat them like a partner.
Yeah, that's a great point, Tom. David, your thoughts on that, just on the partnership from your perspective and some of the key factors for success in terms of, you know, managing that relationship and making sure both parties are basically being successful because we want the customers to be successful, certainly from a solution provider perspective, but also, I mean, you want to be successful too. So I'd love for you to comment a little bit about that partnership and how you view it.
Yeah, sure. So, I I've actually sat on the product management side of things as well. So, you know, I can speak from both sides here. But, I think there's a couple of things that I found that are crucial for a good partnership with customers. That is, you know, that feedback for, you know, enhancements, improvements, innovations, and that kind of thing in the solution itself. We have to balance them. You have to balance them between, you know, what you see in the market, you know, some of the innovations that are out there. But it's also got to be balanced with customer feedback because the other one's actually implementing and using the stuff. And if it doesn't work as advertised or it's not as easy to use or it should be or, you know, anything else, that often is, you know, some of the best sources of feedback for how you can make, you know, incremental improvements into your solutions and really start to fine tune and hone them. So I would say that, you know, as you proceed, you know, forward with any kind of product portfolio, the customer channel for that, because, you know, it's crucial to your success. The other thing I would say is that honesty is very important as well, and that I think that no matter how tough the conversation may be with a customer, I think a good partnership, you know, it has to rely on honesty and trust, and sometimes the message you may send may not be the most comfortable discussion you'll ever have.
Right.
But I think it's so important, and that at the end, you know, the customers say, hey, you know what? It may not be the answer I wanted, but I appreciate the information because now I can plan or I can take action because I have a much firmer foundation as opposed to like, well, you know, maybe we'll think about that and we'll get back to you in
right.
a few weeks and that kind of thing. So
yeah.
It's, you know.
It's so funny that – not funny, but it's interesting that Tom mentioned the word – I wrote it down in my notes – transparency, right, is
yeah.
a key factor from his perspective as the customer. And you mentioned honesty, which are – and these are kind of similar, or at least they're related concepts certainly in the,
yeah.
the customer and solution provider relationship. I had made a joke once. I forget where I was, you know, at an event somewhere, and maybe it's something I've said too in the past, but the joke was about any new feature, any feature that was missing from the product. The standard line was, well, it's on the roadmap, right? You just say, oh, it's on the roadmap. It's
yeah,
coming.
I said that a few times.
Yeah, of course, right? And it could be true, right? But the problem is,
yeah.
you know, you can get into that trap. Vendors can get in that trap of saying that or having that kind of cavalier answer so often that it becomes meaningless, right? And
yeah,
and
yeah.
so I do think and it's hard because I've been on that side too, David, right? I've been in that product side, you know, at a pretty big vendor myself, and it can be so tough where because, you know, Tom from Kawasaki comes to us and says, well, boy, we really need XYZ, we really need it, and if we had that feature, it would be great, you know, and you just want to say yes, you really do. I think most of the vendors operate in really good faith. They want to say yes. They want to satisfy their customers. But sometimes you have to say no, and there's reasons why, right? And
yeah.
But I think if you've got that relationship built up over time from the beginning, right, it goes all the way back to, and this is probably another show, but going back to the pre-sales and the sales process, you've got that kind of relationship. Where is that? You've built up that element of trust. You've built up that element of, hey, we care about each other here, you know, not just we only care about our own things. I think you can have that kind of transparency and that honesty. It's not easy to get, but I think in a relationship where you've got that, I think that's the kind of relationship that can set both parties up for success going forward as well. So
I agree completely. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's hard. I do agree how hard it is because I've had both, like I've had a similar, you know, experience on both sides of the fence, like in a role like Tom has as well as a role like you have, David. So I appreciate
yeah.
both sides of the fence on this one. So
I mean, your development list is always longer than your resource list.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is some allocation of resources you have to do, and you know, it's not the funnest thing in the world, but you know, you try to do the best for your customers. That's for sure.
Yeah, and no doubt, and I think honesty and transparency, as Tom suggested, that really goes a long way into improving
yeah.
relationships, improving outcomes, really for both parties. So I know it's a little bit easier said than done sometimes, but at least we are saying it, and I do believe it certainly, and I know you guys do as well. So, guys, you know, I guess you know, any last kind of, you know, maybe Tom, any last. One or two. If I came to you and I was at a similar size company and I said to you, Tom, you know, I'm thinking about automating my, you know, talent management processes, whether it was goal management or performance management, you know, what would be the first thing you'd tell me to do if I came to you today and said, Tom, I want to start on this. What should I do?
I'd probably say stop thinking and start doing.
Okay.
You know, because you can be your worst enemy. You can rethink it. You can think it to death. And trying to address all the pitfalls of what will go wrong instead of like, what are you trying to achieve? What's the positive? What are you trying to achieve through the technology or the implementation? And as soon as you start taking that path, you get out of your own way.
Right.
And you start saying, you know, this is affordable. You know, yes, I've never had the budget for this before, but what are the outcomes? What are the benefits?
Mm-hmm.
I say, stop trying to overthink it and just start doing it because you,
yeah.
in your heart of heart, if you're asking the question, you've already decided.
Yeah,
that something's missing.
Great.
Yeah,
that's a great piece of advice, Tom. I'm very, very well said, and I'm definitely going to repeat that for sure. I love it, Tom. I just want to first of all, David. Any last words from you two before we wrap it up? And I say thanks to you, gentlemen. David, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on with us as well. Any sort of final things? I asked you the same question. What should I do? What's your advice to me?
Well, I think, you know, talent management is a you know, large topic. So, you know, it can contain performance and comp and learning and recruiting and that kind of thing. And it's one of the questions I got a lot. It's like, okay, you have all this stuff. Where should I start? And the answer to that is start where your biggest pain is. You don't have to go big bang with this stuff. If performance is a pain in your organization, start there. If learning is a pain, if recruiting is a pain, you know, start there. But I think to Tom's point is don't overanalyze it. Identify, you know, what you want to achieve, what your goals are with it, and just do it. And you know, there's no need for a 12, 18 month implementation of this stuff. Get it up and running, refine it as you go, and do it.
Yeah. David, I'm with you all the way on that, and really good piece of advice both from Tom and from David. We could go on for a while, but I think it's a good sort of stopping point now, because that's a good sort of like marching order, go like rallying cry for folks who've been listening to the show to take back with them to their organizations. So I'd like to thank Tom Porter, Director of Human Resources and Administration at Kawasaki Motors Corporation USA, as well as David Ludlow, Global Vice President of Product Marketing for Human Capital Management Solutions at SAP and SuccessFactors. Tom and David, thanks so much for taking the time out to be on the HR Happy Hour show today.
My pleasure.
It is my pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, really enjoyed the show. My name's Steve Bowes. It was a great show tonight. Again, this show was recorded on August 15th. We'll post next week, and we look forward to seeing you again on the next HR Happy Hour show. So many, many thanks, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you.